Hey! Greetings, truth seekers! It is I, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Happy Monday. Happy Super Bowl Monday. Hey, did you hear the socialist team won the Super Bowl yesterday? That's right. The socialist team won, the only publicly owned team in the NFL won last night. Way to go, Green Bay Packers. Who even knew? Who knew? I understand a lot of people watch that show for some reason. And I did as well. Had a good time. But now it's Monday. Now we get down to business. And we got a lot of business straight ahead for you on this program today, including some breaking news, which we're trying to work out right now. It appears that, two points here to note that sort of work together. One, the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, the group of corporatist right-wing Democrats, is folding. See ya. Don't let the door hit you. Secondly, speaking of corporatist Democrats, Congresswoman Jane Harman is cutting and running. That's right, Democratic Congresswoman from California out here. She announced today that she was resigning. Which, you know what? It's February. February 7th. The Congress came in, the new Congress, about 2 weeks ago. And this woman waits till now to quit. Are you kidding me? She's run against Marcy Winograd twice, an actual progressive Democrat, run against her twice in primaries out here in California, and made Marcy Winograd raise a whole lot of money, only to lose to Jane Harman out here in those primaries, only so that Jane Harman could then be sworn into Congress on January 20th and quit 2 weeks later, which will lead to a special election down here in Los Angeles. And of course, because LA and California has plenty of money, no problem running special elections anytime. Hey, Jane, way to go. Man. So we're going to get some, we're trying to reach her on the phone right now, Marcy Winograd. We hope she will join us in just a few minutes to discuss this, to discuss what happened to Jane and why she's leaving. She's the reason she's supposedly leaving is to head up the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, according to a senior congressional source confirmed by the LA Times. That's why she's leaving. I guess she couldn't have done that a few weeks ago or, you know, a few months ago. Marcy Winograd was running, was raising money, was out on the stump campaigning for a year prior to the elections last November. Just confirming, frankly, what a lousy woman Jane Harman really is. Pardon me, but there you go. So we're going to try to reach Marcy Winograd, find out what her plans are going to be if she is going to run in this special election, which is going to be a little bit different out here in California. There will be no primary because of a proposition that was passed last year. Now it's the top two, essentially. There's no party primaries. It's just the top two. She'll explain all of that to us shortly, I hope, if we can get here on the broadcast. On the broadcast, I forgot to say, I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker, broadcasting live from the left coast because the Malloys, they're out on a progressive cruise. They're cruising the Caribbean, or the Caribbean, I don't know how you say it, with a whole bunch of progressives, and hopefully having a good time. They'll be gone all week. You'll get me instead. Hope you don't mind. I'm delighted to be here with you. And if you'd like to reach the broadcast throughout the night, you can do it. You can try to call us at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down. We'd love to hear from you throughout the night as we can, because these are your airwaves. Use them or lose them more than you already have, progressives. 877-520-1150. You can also stop by the chat room at the Brad Blog, which is always lively during the show. We open it up on show nights when I'm sitting in for Mike. Go to the top item at bradblog.com, click through, You can just follow the links. You're smart people. Sign in there, and it's actually, you don't even need to sign in. You just need to come on in and say hello. And helping us out tonight, because Desi Doyen, our usual screener, producer, chat room mistress, is she's running around like her chicken with her head cut off, trying to get Marcy Winograd. So 4Earth is helping us out tonight. Thank you, 4Earth. She's we have drafted her into duty in the bradblog.com chat room. So check that out. You can also Twitter us throughout the program at the Bradblog. That would be me. I am the Bradblog over on the Twitters. So if you have a thought, a question, a comment, a curse, you can send it my way there as well. We're also going to have tonight to say, well, we're going to be celebrating a couple of things. First, in this hour, since it was Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday yesterday, something you may have, maybe you didn't hear. Did you hear, Tony, that it was his 100th? How could you not hear it? Everyone running around, this hagiography about what a fabulous guy he is and what an extraordinary legacy he's left for this nation. Well, that's the mainstream corporate media approved version. We're going to have a different version. Will Bunch is going to be joining us. He's from the Philadelphia Daily News, author of the book Tear Down This Myth. Yes, he will be telling us about the right-wing distortions of the Reagan legacy, all the things they didn't tell you yesterday when they were busy reading the Declaration of Independence before the Super Bowl. Did you see that part, Tony? You missed that part, huh? Yeah, they read the Declaration of Independence before the Super Bowl. I mean, I can't even imagine that going on during the Bush years. During the Bush years, when we'd get to 4th of July, and every year at Bradblog, I would post the Declaration of Independence. I felt like it was seditious. I mean, this document, if you read it, you know, talks about the tyranny of the government, overthrowing the government. That was something you did not talk about back in the darkest days of the Bush regime, back when talking about the president in any negative light at a time of war was, of course, something that was a clear signal that you hated America. Now it's fine. Now you can talk about, apparently the wars are all over. There's no more wars going on because it's just fine to criticize the president at a time of war. And it's fine to talk about sedition and revolution and overthrowing the government. I just, fine. Read the Declaration of Independence before the Super Bowl because they go together like, why do they go together? Why are they, I don't know. But that's what they did. And like I said, I can't imagine them having done that during the Bush regime. Speaking of the Bush regime, leading torturer in chief for 10 years was at that game yesterday. He was not arrested for some reason. I don't completely understand. So we're going to talk about that later in the show. Since today is the 9th anniversary of Bush's decision to ignore the Geneva Convention entirely. It doesn't matter. Al-Qaeda doesn't apply to them because they're enemy combatant, because they don't wear a uniform or some nonsense like that. However, what it meant was that George Bush, who was planning to go to Switzerland, suddenly, for some odd reason, decided to cancel his trip to Switzerland once he heard the charges were potentially going to be brought against him in Switzerland for the torture he carried off in the name of this country for so many years, which Barack Obama has failed to do a damn thing about. And, of course, because of the UN Convention Against Torture, if the home country where the torture exists doesn't bring charges against the war criminal, then the other signatories to the treaty must do so. And so they have an obligation. If George Bush shows up on Swiss soil, well, he needs to be investigated for war crimes. And we are going to be speaking about that later on in the program to Vince Warren of the Center for Constitutional Rights, who has been helpful in bringing forward these torture charges, accountability, the rule of law, the things that Republicans used to give a damn about. Oh, all of that. We got a big, big show ahead for you, just like I promised. Plus, your calls and stuff that's on your mind and We'll and Marcy Winograd. Okay, I think we do. We are going to have her after the break. So buckle in, kids. It's going to be a big, big night. Let's see. Marcy Winograd, Vince Warren, Will Bunch, all straight ahead. And what other, there was some other business I did want to get. Well, I'll get to it. I'll get to it as the night goes on. Oh, Clarence Thomas. Man, talking about criminals. Hopefully I'll have time to talk about it a little bit tonight. We're going to have Bob Edgar on tomorrow night to talk about this. I wrote about it last week at the Brad blog. Clarence Thomas committed a crime for the last 20 years by falsifying his disclosure forms and not reporting that his wife was bringing in hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Heritage Foundation. Could you imagine if Ruth Bader Ginsburg did that with Acorn? Good Lord. Brad, in from Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. Brad Friedman in for MikeMalloy.com. We've got some breaking news here tonight with Jane Harman, a congresswoman from California, just cutting and running here at the last second. What, after 3 weeks in Congress, in I think it's her ninth session, it's rather incredible that she did this. This after twice defeating Marcy Winograd out here in California, in Los Angeles, for in the primary. We have Marcy Winograd right now with us on the phone. There will be a special election. And hey, Marcy, thanks for jumping in at the last second. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Oh, thank you so much, Brad. Great to be with you.
It's great to have you here. And boy, were you as mystified and kind of angry as I was when I saw this news today?
Well, it happened at such a dizzying pace. I have to tell you, I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
I teach high school in South Los Angeles. So I went to my car on my conference period just to routinely check my phone, and I had about 18 messages. And I thought, what? What's happening?
Right.
And, of course, I had quite a few calls from people wanting to know if I was going to run. And my feeling is that I really want to weigh the options. I want to see what people are thinking. I did talk to Janice Hahn. She called me right away to announce that she was going to run, to ask for my endorsement should I decide not to run. And we had an opportunity to talk, and basically what I told her, Brad, was that I have two primary concerns in regards to whoever goes to Congress, and that is, number one, that I want somebody to go to Congress who's going to challenge, be it sponsored by Democrats or Republicans, who will challenge this perpetual war policy that sends our youth, the young men and women I teach, to battle, sends them home to commit suicide, bankrupts our budget, 50 cents of every tax dollar, you know, goes to military contracts and so forth, that I need to know somebody's going to have the courage to challenge this. And she said to me, she assured me, well, I've been very critical of the wars. And I said, that's good to hear. I said, I have another concern, and that is, given what has happened in Egypt, and the whole world has witnessed the power of the people in the street demanding change, and given that the United States has aligned itself with Israel in the peace negotiations, giving Israel, what, $30 billion, we are not honest brokers for peace. It's jeopardizing our safety, our security across the globe, not to mention we are complicit in egregious human rights violations. I said, I need to know that you are going to advocate for honest peace negotiations. And she said she wanted to make it clear that she was a friend of Israel. At which point I said, well, would you be willing to meet with a group of Jews and Palestinians who might offer an alternative viewpoint? And she said yes. So that's where we left it. I think we need a progressive voice in this race, and by that I mean somebody who is going to challenge every policy that is only bankrupting our country and endangering our youth. It's time for a new voice.
You're talking like a candidate there, Marcy. So Janice Hahn, she is currently, for people who don't know nationally, she is a state a legislator at this time?
She's a city councilwoman.
City councilwoman, right.
Yes.
Okay. And so she's one of the possibilities. I heard somebody float the name of Secretary of State Deborah Bowen. I've heard our old friend John Amato being floated from Crooks and Liars. When will you, because we only have a minute here or so, when will we know when this election will be? And B, when will you make your decision about running in it?
Well, my understanding is that Jane Harman has not officially resigned, and so special election cannot be set until she does that.
Mm-hmm.
And once she does, then I think by law the election has to be held within 126 days or something like that.
Okay.
So we're not at that juncture yet, and in the meantime, I want to learn more. I want to explore. If people want to get a message to me, they can reach me on my Facebook page, Marcy Winograd. I'd love to hear from you.
At Marcy Winograd via Facebook. Is your old website no longer up and running?
Correct.
Uh-oh.
Correct.
That's how she gets you.
Yeah, you know, my life, we were moving on here.
Unbelievable. I mean, I can't even, I'm sure you're feeling it more than I am, but to come in like that after you ran for a year for this seat, to come in and 3 weeks later say, oh, I'm quitting, I just find appalling.
Yeah, it does not seem fair to the constituents. Whatever happens, I'm very hopeful that we will have a representative for the people in Congress.
Marcy Winograd, thank you for joining us. Look up Marcy Winograd on Facebook if you'd like to send her your message. Give her your thoughts one way or another. Really appreciate you jumping in at the last minute, Marcy.
Thank you, Brad.
Good luck.
Take care.
All right. Will Bunch coming up straight ahead talking about Reagan legacy and what you didn't hear over the corporate media. Brad Friedman in from Malloy. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Man, it's one of those nights. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. And we're going to be joined momentarily by Will Bunch of the... I don't even have my notes. It's just that kind of a night. Well, I don't have them. We'll just make it up. Senior writer. There we go. Senior writer at the Philadelphia Daily News. Author of Tear Down This Myth, The Right-Wing Distortion of the Reagan Legacy. His newest book is The Backlash, Right-Wing Radicals, High-Def Hucksters, and Paranoid Politics in the Age of Obama. Hey, Will, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Delighted you could be here, and thanks for allowing me to push you back a little bit there. We wanted to get in Marcy Winograd with this news of Jane Harmon suddenly cutting and running 2 weeks after joining the new session of Congress. So we were able to get her, and I apologize for not getting you after the
blue dog's on the run today, so that's the theme, right? So,
no kidding. Yeah, about time. Who needs them? Okay,
yeah,
sir. I figured you might be. All right, Mr. Bunch. Here's my question for you. I'm reading over the weekend the Independent, the British Independent, Robert Fisk, a noted commentator, and he writes this. He says about Egypt. He says, if Mubarak goes today or later this week, Egyptians will debate why it took so long to rid themselves of this tin pot dictator. The problem was that under the autocrats, Nasser, Sadat, Mubarak, and whomever Washington blesses next, the Egyptian people skipped two generations of maturity. For the first essential task of a dictator is to infantilize his people, to transform them into political six-year-olds obedient to a patriarchal headmaster. They will be given fake newspapers, fake elections, fake ministers, and a lot of false promises. And he goes on about that and about infantilizing the people. And as I'm reading this, I'm also hearing about Ronald Reagan and his 100th birthday and how wonderful he was in every respect. And he should just, he's minutes away from being carved into Mount Rushmore. And, I mean, does that ring any bells to you, this infantilization of our people when it comes to not just Reagan, but all of our politics of late?
Well, sure. Right? Well, sure. Yeah, it does ring a bell, doesn't it? It does sound vaguely familiar. So, yeah, no, I mean, this is a major theme of my book, Tear Down This Myth, about the Reagan myth, is, you know, when you're talking about fake newspapers and, you know, all these people have a role to play. You know, the media was way too eager for a lot of reasons to buy into this mythologized version of Ronald Reagan, and you have a large percentage of the public, not everybody, thank God, but a huge number of people out there looking for this kind of oversimplified hero, and then you have kind of to steal something from my other book, from the title of my other book, but you have these kind of high def hucksters like the Grover Norquist of the world, you know, who are able and willing to cash in on these tendencies of the media to kowtow to the right wing and of people wanting to buy this right wing mythology, you know, and they've used this heroic Ronald Reagan, who essentially has become nothing more than a bronze statue now, you know, 7 years after his death,
right,
to sell policies that go well beyond. I mean, the thing about Reagan is it gets complicated because obviously, you know, he did signal a rise of conservatism in this country, and I think for progressives like us, we don't remember that politically anyway as a great time, mm-hmm. and there was a lot not to like. But I mean, as many have said, and I'll say the same thing that others have said this weekend, is that there's no way that Reagan could win in the Republican primaries in 2012 because he'd be seen as too liberal. I mean, it's crazy, having lived through that time, to think that Republican politics would move so far to the far right that Reagan would be really too moderate or even too liberal on some issues, yeah, for his own party. But that's the reality of the Reagan myth.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that Ronald Reagan could not even win a primary election right now with the Tea Party. So let's go through some of these points that apparently have either been forgotten or just we don't talk about anymore when it comes to Reagan. What would be some of those things, Will Bunch, that would disqualify Ronald Reagan from being elected?
Well, if you were doing an attack ad against Reagan in 2012, I mean, the first thing you'd mention is, here's a guy who supported amnesty for, you know, what Republicans call legal immigrants, or I call them undocumented immigrants. So,
right.
You know, yeah, here's a guy who supported the largest amnesty program for immigrants, undocumented, in American history.
3 to 4 million undocumented aliens. Amnesty.
Yeah, absolutely. Largest ever, 1986.
Yep.
Here's a guy who raised taxes repeatedly, not once, not twice, but depending on what your definition of the word tax increase is, anywhere from 7 or 8 to 11 times, and definitely 4 or 5 major ones that are really worth noting, including the one that Rush Limbaugh seems to know nothing about.
And that was
hilarious. But,
yeah. For those who don't know, we may play this later on in the show, but our pal Mike Stark from StarkReports.com called Rush on Friday and basically asked, why is it that conservatives, so-called, lionize Ronald Reagan, given, and then he went and listed all of these things that Rush could not even speak to. It was remarkable.
But the most hilarious was when Mike Stark started talking about how Reagan, you know, increased taxes to pay for Social Security, and Limbaugh was like indignant, like, that's just not true. He never raised taxes to pay for Social Security. Well, this is one of the, like, you know, I mean, that would almost be like saying, well, you know, President Obama didn't have a health care plan. You know, I mean, it was really that big a part of his presidency.
Yeah. He didn't have a health care. It was Congress who did it. Obama had nothing to do with it. I mean,
maybe that's it. I don't know.
I'm saying that's what they were talking about.
Yeah, right.
It was pathetic. His excuse is, well, where did you hear that?
Where did you hear that?
Well, I was like, what do you mean, where did I hear it? I read history books. It's not a secret. It's only a secret if you listen to Rush Limbaugh and the entirety of the media, who don't bother to mention these things.
Right, because, I mean, the thing about, and why I think that's so significant, Reagan increasing payroll taxes like that, is the payroll tax is a very unprogressive tax, meaning that it hits working class people and middle class and lower middle middle-class people harder than it hits rich people.
Right.
And that saw a substantial increase because of the Social Security tax deal that Reagan did.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were like a guy who worked in a steel mill or worked, a custodian or something like that during Reagan's presidency, you were paying more out of your weekly paycheck to the federal government in taxes after he came into office than mm-hmm. you were before. So to call this guy the great tax cutter of American history, I mean, sure, if you're Gordon Gekko or somebody like that, then he was a great tax cutter because he did, incredibly decrease marginal rates on the wealthiest taxpayers, and it started the things that we all know about that happened over the last 30 years, including just the huge gap between the rich and the poor in this country, and the fact that CEOs who used to make 35 or 40 times what their workers make, which mm-hmm. they seem to be happy with at the time, now typically make, 400 times what their workers make.
Well, of course, that might help him get elected with the Tea Party. So let's focus on the things that...
Oh, well, the Tea Party, yeah, well, that's another... That's my other book. That's another story. But
Tea Party, just Republicans as a whole. I mean, they are under the impression, some of them sort of kind of know about the Ronald Reagan amnesty to the undocumented workers. No, almost none of them know that he raised taxes anywhere, as you say, from 7 to 11 times, depending on how you look at it.
Right. I would say also the other biggest thing they don't know is that he increased the size of government
yep.
by every measure, whether if you want to measure it by number of employees, he increased that. If you want to measure it by number of federal cabinet departments, he added one. If you want to measure it by spending, which is how a lot of people, especially in this day and age, would measure it, well, even when inflation was taken into account, spending still increased 2.5% on average every year of his presidency. And the debt, you mentioned the Tea Party. I mean, their big issue supposedly is the debt. That's all I keep talking about.
Right.
As you probably know, I mean, Reagan racked up more debt than all the presidents who came before him.
Mm-hmm.
It went from $700 billion when he took office to nearly $3 trillion by the time he left. When he came into office, actually, the U.S. was generally a creditor nation, as it had been ever since World War One. By the time he left, we were a debtor nation, and we've continued on that path to this day. And so, if you're one of those people who worry a lot about China, owning too much of our debt, well, guess where that all started? That all started with Reagan. So this is that, and then we haven't even talked about foreign policy. But certainly, when you come there, it gets more complicated there because the truth is a lot of the more kind of hawkish tenets of modern Republican foreign policy wouldn't have been supported by Reagan or go beyond him. I mean, he was almost kind of a dove on some issues. Now, I don't want to whitewash it totally. I mean, obviously, I think some of his policies in Latin America and in supporting proxies who committed all kinds of atrocities mm-hmm. was horrible. So sometimes when I talk up this point, I get accused of I said something once in an interview, and a bunch of commenters said, "How could you forget the Contras?" I don't forget that. On some other issues, torture. He was against torture.
He signed the UN Convention against Torture, which we'll be talking about in the next hour in regard to George W. Bush. He also cut and run out of Lebanon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you were talking about things that would be used against him in that attack ad, there you go. I mean, as soon as there was a bombing with multiple U.S. fatalities in Lebanon, within a very short period of time, our troops were pulled right out of there.
Which was
the right thing to do. I mean, they shouldn't have been there. They had a really muddled mission. They shouldn't have been there in the first place. But
I use the term cut and run only because that's that's their term. That's the term on the right.
That's the way they refer to it.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid, Obama did something like that, say in Afghanistan or something like
any
that.
Any Democrat, anything. It's cutting and running. Ronald Ray, and by the way, we're speaking with Will Bunch of Philadelphia Daily News, author of Tear Down This Myth, The Right-Wing Distortion of the Reagan Legacy. And if you want to try to get in, particularly if you're a right-winger out there, if you're a Republican, you disagree with Will or I on this, if you want to try to get in, 877-520-1150. We'd love to hear from you, because unlike Fox News, we actually are fair and balanced and open to other thoughts. He also negotiated with terrorists, did he not, Will Bunch?
Well, he depends which area you're talking about. I mean, he in the Middle East, he traded arms for hostages.
That's right.
Which almost cost him his presidency in 1987 when it came out that was going on. We had a number of Americans who were taken hostage in Lebanon during the unrest there in the mid 80s. Mm-hmm. And you know, it tore Reagan apart. He felt that it was his job as president to get those people out, and he decided he wanted to do it any way possible, including these arms deals with our, you know, supposed arch enemies in Iran. And in fact, I mean, all this kind of crazy foreign policy stuff happened where, you know, we supported Saddam Hussein and Iraq in this war with Iran, but then, you know, when Iraq would get an advantage in the war, then we go to Iran and say, hey, you guys are losing the war. Do you want to buy some arms from us? So we were, like, playing both sides against each other.
And of course, don't forget that, you know, we cited Saddam Hussein gassing, you know, all the Kurds.
Right.
He got the gas from us during Reagan. Will, I got to take a quick break here. Speaking with Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Daily News, tear down this myth, the right-wing distortion of the Reagan legacy. More Will Bunch straight ahead, and your calls. Brad in for Malloy. Yeah, you know the reason you feel free is because Ronald Reagan personally gave you your freedom. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight and all week long. Glad you could be with us. We are joined still by Will Bunch of Philadelphia Daily News, the author of Tear Down This Myth, The Right-Wing Distortions of the Reagan Legacy. Okay, Will, very quickly, because I want to get to the phones here, but we ran through.
Yeah.
Okay, amnesty he gave to so-called illegal aliens. He raised taxes. He cut and run. This is Ronald Reagan we're talking about. Cut and run out of Lebanon. He negotiated with terrorists in Iran. He blew out the deficit. And also, he supported the bailout of Chrysler for billions of dollars, and he bailed out and took over the Continental Illinois Bank, as I recall. Did
right. You bet. I mean, you really can't find an example of something where he took a Tea Party-like stance of, you know, government should not get involved in this. Even his famous quote about government being the problem, he prefaced it by saying, in the present crisis, government is not the problem. He never really said he didn't believe in government.
Yeah.
I mean these right-wing extrapolations of what they think Reagan meant are just insane. You know, he saved Social Security. He didn't cut entitlement programs. He added the Federal Department of Veteran Affairs, which, you know,
he grew the government.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if Obama proposed adding a cabinet agency of any kind?
It would be
big government getting in our lives, like that lady on that soda tax commercial.
Let me get to a call here I want to go to Jerry from Madison, Wisconsin, who claims to be a quote unquote liberal. We'll see. In favor of Reagan. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. You're a quote unquote liberal?
Yes, sir.
All right.
You're a Reagan liberal?
So why are you in favor of Reagan, sir?
Because I never saw Reagan as a conservative. I never did. I knew he was a Republican. That much I knew.
Sure.
But his policies, to me, were actually more liberal than they ever were conservative. And that's why I like him.
Okay.
Well, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Will.
Go ahead. I was going to say nowadays, sure. Nowadays he would be definitely a moderate. You know, on a couple issues, maybe he would be called liberal today.
Mm-hmm. Well, he certainly would be. Thanks, Jerry, for your thoughts. I appreciate it.
I would say the one thing. I mean, I think the most. If you want to hold Ronald Reagan out as a liberal, the best thing you can say in that regard is everything we know from having seen his diaries and all of that. He really did want to get rid of nuclear weapons. He really believed in that issue, just the way many of us liberals do. And you know.
And if Barack Obama came out today and said, "I want the world to get rid of all nuclear weapons." weapons. Oh, my God. Can you imagine the response from the, from the right?
Well, if Obama does that, and I'd like to see it, I think what he should do is just give a speech that only quotes Reagan's words, which exist, you know? I mean, and that would be his only chance of getting anywhere with that.
Well, it seems to me that Obama, frankly, is to the right of Reagan on many issues, has been forced there. And just the fact that we could even think now, 20, 30 years later, that Ronald Reagan was a liberal just shows, does it not, Will, how far this country has been pushed to the right?
And that's the point, and that's really one of the main points of my book, Tear Down This Myth. Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a quick example of that. I mean, Reagan believed that, you know, his advisors pressed him to militarily retaliate for some of these terrorist attacks in the Middle East that took place in, with one exception, which was Libya. But most of the times he turned down all these schemes, and he would say, if we do this, we'll kill civilians with collateral damage, and that'll just be like terrorism itself. You know, killing these innocent civilians. Mm. You know, now we have Obama with his drones in Afghanistan.
Yep.
You know, it's and how many civilians have died in collateral damage from that? So you're right. There's a perfect example of a case where Obama is probably to the right of Reagan on an issue.
Yeah, I mean, and when you saw David Stockman, Reagan's budget director, was on
right.
Bill Maher a week or so ago, and I mean, this guy sounded like a pinko liberal lefty. I mean, he was to the left of Denis Kucinich.
Yeah, I never thought I would say this in a million years, but I've kind of come to really like David Stockman. You know, I always look forward.
I mean,
if that doesn't tell you that times have changed, what does, Brad?
We are in bad shape, sir. Hey, Will Bunch, I really appreciate your dropping by here. Let's do it again sometime, sir. Really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, anytime, Brad. I'm a big fan. Anytime.
You're very kind, sir. Thank you, brother. Will Bunch from Philadelphia Daily News, author of Tear Down This Myth, The Right-Wing Distortion of the Reagan Legacy, and his newer book, The Backlash, Right-Wing Radicals, High-Def Hucksters, and Paranoid Politics in the Age of Obama. Let's keep Will Bunch in business, folks. Go buy those books. You can get the links at bradblog.com. Thanks, amigo. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
All righty. Coming up next, we're going to have Vince Warren moving from Bush's fake legacy to, from Reagan's to Bush's real legacy of torture. All of that and more straight ahead. Brad Friedman, all night, all week long, in for Mike. Welcome back to hour number two of the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in all week long for the cruising Mike Malloy. He's out on a progressive cruise. He and Kathy sailing the Caribbean with some of our friends as well. Hope they're having a great time. Glad you can be here with us. However, I am Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your very friendly citizen, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, if you ask me, now drafted into duty once again to be the media on the corporate mainstream media. That's right, our public airwaves, and I'm delighted to be here. We're going to go momentarily to Vince Warren of the Center for Constitutional Rights, but just a couple of quick points here. Well, Daryl Issa has been tweeting. He's Congressman Daryl Issa from California out here. He's been tweeting as the new chair of the Oversight Committee in Congress, and a couple of weeks ago, actually about a full month ago now, he put out a tweet, said, "Got any tips on government waste, fraud, or abuse? Here's our secure, anonymous whistleblower portal." And he gave the address for it. "And please share," he said. So I asked him a question in reply. "Are classified documents okay for the secure, anonymous whistleblower portal?" For some reason, he hasn't answered that question, and I've asked it every few days over the past month, hoping to get an answer. I also sent it to his congressional staff via email. Haven't gotten an answer, but I'm working on one. Hopefully we would get one because, you know, if someone in Congress knows about, or, you know, someone in the armed forces or anywhere else knows about waste, fraud, and abuse going on and can prove it through classified documents, doesn't Daryl Issa want to hear from them? Of course, this might run afoul of his his position on WikiLeaks. You see what happens when you don't have coherent policies, when you have policies that only work for the moment? That's the mess that Daryl Issa is in. And speaking of messes, I got to prepare in advance. There we go. Okay. Speaking of messes that people are in, George W. Bush would seem to be in a bit of a mess. You might have seen him last night on the big screen down there in Dallas at the Super Bowl. He was there because he wasn't in Switzerland for some odd reason. He canceled a planned appearance in Switzerland. For some reason that maybe our next guest can help us understand. We're joined now by Vince Warren, the executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. He's a human and civil rights lawyer. He's also a jazz musician. Cool. Hey, Vince, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. All right, so George W. Bush was at the Super Bowl. He didn't go to Switzerland. Why, oh, why did he not go to Switzerland? And why did you ruin his trip for him, Vince?
Well, you know, one of the... You have to ask yourself, would you rather be in Dallas or would you rather be in Geneva, Switzerland? And I think it could go either way depending on what you're into. But I think the reason why he decided not to go to Switzerland as planned, because he was supposed to be speaking at a big fundraiser there, mm-hmm. was because the Center for Constitutional Rights and a number of other human rights groups were waiting for him in Switzerland, where we were prepared to file a criminal charge against him for the torture that he approved from 2001 until leaving office with respect to various detainees in Guantanamo and people in secret CIA black sites. So I think he was not very eager to be confronting those charges. And so he, rather than going to Geneva, he decided just to stay local and to watch the Super Bowl.
Now help us understand how this works. Why would Switzerland bring charges against Bush? This has to do with the UN Convention Against Torture, does it not?
It does. The way that it normally works is the first thing that we have to remember is that torture is one of the worst crimes that any government or individual can do. It is amongst the very high ones, like genocide, that international law recognizes as a crime that people really simply can't duck. And normally what happens is when people commit those types of crimes within the jurisdiction, as George Bush did within the United States, it's up to the local government, which would be the United States government, to do a criminal investigation and then to file charges if those charges are warranted. But we've had three attorney generals under George Bush and one under Barack Obama, and none of them at all have seen fit to even look at the crimes that were committed by George Bush. So having no prosecution here in the United States, international law permits under the Convention Against Torture for foreign prosecutors who have an obligation to investigate torture when a torturer is on their soil, it allows them, if asked, to begin prosecution and investigation. And that's what we were asking the Swiss government to do.
And it doesn't permit them to do so. They're actually, as I understand the UN Convention Against Torture, they're actually required to do so. Are they not, if there's a charge brought?
They are. It's not discretionary the way that here it is in the United States. And there's a good reason for that, because the after World War II, the atrocities in World War II, and even going back into the mid-1930s, the international the groups got together, the countries got together and said, in order for us to punish people when governments won't punish the perpetrators, that we want to make it a mandatory act for, and it isn't mandatory in some jurisdictions, but not all of them, to be able to prosecute this. Switzerland has one of those statutes that says it must investigate if it has knowledge that a person is on, a torturer is on their soil, mm-hmm. And it's brought to their attention. So there's really no discretion there for them at all.
Now, and you were speaking of World War II, for those skeptics who are listening who feel that who feel that somehow waterboarding is not torture. Just to be clear, we actually held members of the Japanese military accountable for waterboarding after World War II. One of my co-bloggers at bradblog.com, Ernest Canning, who will join us later this week, his father was one of those who was waterboarded by the Japanese, and his father thankfully lived to help testify against these people. We brought charges against people for doing exactly what we spent the last 8 to 10 years doing, did we not?
That's exactly what we did. And, you know, folks need to recognize that this is not, while international law doesn't always reach the United States in our daily lives, mm-hmm. that we have to remember that after World War II, that these principles called universal jurisdiction principles developed from the Nuremberg principles. And it's the idea that there should be no safe haven, that there can't be any safe haven under the law for people who are torturers. Otherwise, a torturer, you know, a former head of state could travel to this country, to that country, and stay there and live out the rest of his life in relative peace and quiet. Mm-hmm. And this is really designed to make a world community to have a joint obligation and commitment to punishing torture for the purpose of eradicating torture, right? This isn't to punish any particular individual. This is to eradicate something that we all think should be eradicated, which is torture.
And just to connect a few more dots here, Vince Warren, we're speaking with Vince Warren, Executive Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, to connect a few more dots here. The UN Convention Against Torture was signed by that liberal lefty pinko Ronald Reagan, as I recall. And it should also be pointed out for further skeptics that our U.S. Constitution requires that treaties that our government enters into, and you're the attorney, so tell me if I understand this right, Vince, treaties that our government enters into are to be regarded exactly as the law of the land, like any other law that might be passed in Congress.
Our Constitution is the law of the land, and in addition to that, the treaties that are entered into by the heads of state in the United for the United States need to be treated as the supreme law of the land as well. So the United States is a signatory to the Convention Against Torture, just like Switzerland is, and we are to treat that as high a law and as supreme a law as the Constitution itself. Now, the big problem is in the United States, the political winds blow in different ways, and here certainly under the Bush administration and currently under the Obama administration, there doesn't seem to be any stomach for complying with our obligations. And so it is necessary for the time being for us to explore different countries to be able to do something that the United States isn't doing. And so that's why we, the Center for Constitutional Rights, have also provided information and documents and legal analysis and clients to the prosecutions, the investigations that are currently underway in Spain with respect to a number of people that wrote the Bush torture memos,
yeah,
and other folks. So this is not a stunt or a game, mm-hmm. but what it really is an opportunity for us to take the law seriously and to hold our officials accountable so that we can be sure that people won't be torturing in our name.
Well, and I have some questions for you on that. We're going to have to take a quick break. We're speaking with Vince Warren. I have some questions as far as what is Barack Obama and Eric Holder, what is their culpability here when they decline or refuse to bring the charges that they are actually required to do under the UN Convention Against Torture. We're speaking with Vince Warren. We're going to go to your calls as well. 877-520-1150. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning.
I see a red door and I want it painted black.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. 22 minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Speaking with Vince Warren of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Vince wrote today, I believe it was, at Huffington Post about George Bush cutting and running from his torture case in Switzerland. Bush was supposed to go and speak at a charity gala on February 12th in Geneva, Switzerland. And for some reason, today being, by the way, the 9th anniversary of George Bush saying he didn't give a damn about the Geneva Convention when it comes to torturing, for some reason, George Bush suddenly declined and canceled that trip. And Vince Warren writes that he believes it had something to do with the fact that the Center for Constitutional Rights was helping to bring charges, or at least a complaint, in Switzerland about George W. Bush's torture policies under the UN Convention Against Torture. Okay, Vince, I'm trying to nail this down. Has the complaint actually been brought? I believe that there have been reports that it was brought. You said, I think, they can't be brought unless he's actually on the Swiss soil.
No, that's right. I think the reports that have been saying that the complaint have been filed are wrong. Under the Swiss law, it requires the presence of the torturer on Swiss soil in order for that process to move forward. So George Bush not showing up to Switzerland for canceling this gala event actually defeats the jurisdiction of the case that we would have filed, which is, of course, why he didn't go. But what we've done is we have made public, rather than to let a good opportunity go to waste so that people will know precisely what the case is against George Bush, we've made public what we call the preliminary Bush torture indictment, which is available on our organizational website, www.ccrjustice.org, and there you can see it's about a 40-page document, including references to 2,500 different documents that detail from the public record the case against George Bush. But the case in Switzerland has not been filed.
Is there an official reason, by the way, why George W. Bush did not go to Switzerland? Has either he or his sponsors in Switzerland given an official reason for the cancellation?
Yeah, the sponsors in Switzerland initially, after knowing about planned protests that were going to be happening there for weeks, said that they felt that they couldn't guarantee the safety of anyone, and so they went ahead and canceled the whole shebang. Now, of course, they knew about this whole thing for weeks, and it wasn't until just before this weekend that George Bush canceled, and I think what was happening was it became clearer that he was going to be facing some legal challenges as well. So there's no doubt in our mind at the Center for Constitutional Rights that he cut and ran because he didn't want to face the music of this torture case.
And I believe that the protesters were telling everybody to bring a shoe to the protest. Did I read that correctly?
I did read that as well. And I think, you know, that certainly would have been a fitting, I guess, if the shoe fits. I guess
there you go.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
I hear you. Well done. All right, we're speaking with Vince Warren of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and our number is 877-520-1150 if you want to get in a question. And Vince, if you're able to hang around after the break, I'd also like to ask you about this Glenn Beck situation, Fox News, and this really appalling attack on Francis Fox Piven,
sure,
this professor who, frankly, I had never heard of before. But let me see if I can get to a quick call here before the do I have time? I better come back around. All right. Hang on. If you're on the phone there, Tim in Detroit, Maria and Quincy, going to try to get to some other folks there. Going to try to get to as many folks as I can. At what point, Vince Warren, does the Barack Obama administration become accountable for not bringing forward the charges that, as I understand, they're required to do under the UN Convention Against Torture that we signed?
They are. Under the UN Convention Against Torture, all signatories, including the United States, have an affirmative obligation. In addition, Article 4 of the Geneva Conventions, the convention that George Bush said didn't exist, also require a country or a government that knows that torture was committed on its soil to do an investigation. So and in addition to that, there is already a statute, a federal law, that deals with prosecution prosecution of torture offenses in the United States. Ironically, that the U.S. put into place in, after complying with the Convention Against Torture.
Oh.
So all the places, all of the pieces are there. President Obama wants to look forward. He doesn't want to look back. The problem is prosecutors look back, and that's what they prosecute.
Vince Warren from Center for Constitutional Rights. Brad in for Mike Malloy. Your calls, much more straight ahead. Stay with us.
And when, although I wasn't there, he said I was his friend.
All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mr. Malloy all week long while they're out on their progressive cruise. Speaking with Vince Warren, the Executive Director of Center for Constitutional Rights. And, of course, you can get more information on the torture charges that need to be brought, investigated against George W. Bush at his website, ccrjustice.org. Well, of course, I got some more questions, but let's get to some of these callers, 877-520-1150. And also, I want to get to this Glenn Beck situation with you in a bit, Vince. But let me get to Tim from Detroit, Michigan. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is this. Regarding the U.N. prescription against torture, number one, are there any statute of limitations in that prescription? Number two, if there aren't, can any of those states that have signed that the U.N. Convention Against Torture, I think in 1984, can any of those states pick up the people that have been accused of torture, the state actors, any time in the future?
A great question. Vince?
Yeah, there's no statute of limitations. There's no prohibition on with respect to time as to when these things were brought. And, in fact, any of the 147 countries that are signatories to the Convention of Torture can initiate a criminal investigation with respect to these particular allegations.
Does that answer your question, Tim?
I had one more quick question.
Go ahead.
Regarding President Obama, who has chosen not to turn in George Bush and his cohort to the UN, I would assume, for charges of torture, or the United States not to do an investigation regarding torture. Is Barack Obama also culpable of effectively committing a war crime?
Well, Tim, you know, it not exactly. The U.S. and Barack Obama and Eric Holder have obligations under the Geneva Conventions because the Geneva Conventions applied to the men who were held in Guantanamo and beyond. But those obligations don't automatically make them eligible for war crimes. I think that there has to be some step of either covering things up or trying to affirmatively shield torturers with immunity. That would be factually something that I think would be more along those lines. I do want to say, though, clearly that President Barack Obama told us all that we were to hold him accountable for doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what the right thing is to do. He simply politically does not want to deal with this issue. When he came into office, he was all bipartisan. He was all Abraham Lincoln. I've got both sides in the White House, which is great. But the problem is that it doesn't give him, I don't think he's got the political fortitude at this point to be able to do really what's right and what we, or at least I would have expected of him as a constitutional scholar and someone who upheld the rule of law the way that he said that he did.
Yeah, and really great questions, Tim. Thanks for the calls. I appreciate it because it seems to me that he's absolutely right as far as the culpability when it comes to what we now know about, you know, that WikiLeaks has published concerning what the Obama administration did in Spain and how they helped discourage a Spanish judge from bringing charges against the Bush Six, the torture attorneys and so forth. Isn't that exactly what you're talking about, Vince Warren? Vince Warren, didn't he in fact get in the way of a prosecution by shielding the Bush Six in this Spanish investigation?
Well, I think You know, I think you can certainly look at it that way, and I don't have a problem looking with it that way. I think what makes it a little bit more difficult to understand, or to at least to come down on one side of that issue or the other, is where the line of diplomacy and where the line of judicial meddling comes in. And I think this seems very close to judicial meddling, i.e., trying to work the Spanish courts to not hear the case that we are involved in Spain, because politically it's problematic. But you know, the cables I think were very revealing in terms of the fact that it happened. But I think as hopefully there'll be more information that comes out about precisely what the United States government did with respect to this. And I think at the end of the day, it's still in Spain's ballpark. It's up to the Spanish courts to decide how they're going to be moving this thing forward.
877-520-1150. If you have a question or thought for Vince Warren of the Center for Constitutional Rights on the torture issue, and then we'll hit Glenn Beck in a moment. But let's go to Fred in Concord, New Hampshire, who, according to what this must be a typo on my screen, believes that torture is good. Is that right, Fred?
No, not at all.
Okay, good.
You got me all wrong on that one.
Oh, good, good. Well, then I'm once again, I got to fire Desi, or a call screener. Good. Well, what's on your mind, Fred?
Well, I think, well, first of all, just a quick side note. I had read this book by a psychiatrist called Bush on the Couch, and he did a psychological assessment of Bush. And as a child, Bush was sadistic and would torture animals. So I think it's interesting that he's so callous on this point of torture. He also, as governor, would preside over executions of prisoners. And actually seemed to have some enjoyment on it. He would make a point of going to see the executions. But besides that, isn't there anything that can be done against this guy for starting a war under false pretenses? Because I know torture is bad enough, but to have 4,000 of our troops and almost a million Iraqis dead because of this guy who wants to avenge his daddy, because as a quote, he said, he tried to kill my daddy.
Well, yeah, an interesting question, Fred. Let's get Vince's thoughts on this. Interestingly enough, while torturing people is a crime, starting wars based on lies, is that actually illegal?
Well, Fred, thanks for the question. The issue with wars is not so much whether the heads of state lie to the public of the state in order to go into the war. The issue really is the nature, is whether the war is an aggressive war, meaning is it being fought or was being engaged in without any without respect to self-defense and different things like that. And, you know, the Center for Constitutional Rights over the years, dating back to the first Gulf War in the 90s, had looked into filing lawsuits to enjoin and to stop wars that were being engaged in, particularly the Gulf War, the first Gulf War. Very, very difficult to do. And I think the question really revolves around what the state's self-defense justification is, and whether international courts are in a position to second guess that gut justification, and generally international courts are not, and neither are U.S. courts.
Does that answer your question, Fred?
Yes, yes.
Thanks
so much.
It's sad,
however, that we have to rely on another country to bring this guy to justice. I can't believe the apathy that's in this country.
I hear you, Fred. I think most people don't know about it because the corporate media doesn't talk about it over our public airwaves very often. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Vince, Cosmic Michael in chat has in the bradblog.com chat room tonight. Says, can we extradite Bush to Switzerland? In other words, can they bring charges and require his extradition?
The reverse Assange, I guess, is what
they
call it.
There
right?
You go. That's right.
Thanks for the question. No, we cannot extradite him because you can only extradite people when charges are pending, when the person is being sought for charges. So if, for example, Sweden had filed charges or wanted to investigate charges, and he'd left Switzerland, and he had left Switzerland, then the question would be, would the U.S. extradite George Bush to Switzerland if the Swiss government wanted him? But we're just touching on the Julian Assange things for a second, and I think it's really important. Julian Assange, in our view, in my view, is someone that really does need to be thinking very seriously about how the United States is dealing with his case. And the irony is not lost on me that Eric Holder refuses to prosecute a torturer. George Bush, and you can go down the list of many people in that administration, refuses to even think about prosecuting them. But as soon as Julian Assange, you know, release and WikiLeaks release some embarrassing information, you know, he's ready to indict him under the Espionage Act, which he actually can't even do.
Yeah, they're like turning somersaults to try to bend some kind of law to figure out how they can bring charges against a guy who clearly broke no laws.
Exactly, and it simply is not going to happen. If the U.S. follows the law, two things will happen: that George Bush will be currently investigated for the crimes that he committed, and Julian Assange will not be extradited to the United States because he has committed no crime. That's if the U.S. follows the law. If they don't, the opposite happens.
Do you guys intend to stay on this as long as it takes? Because it seems that, you know, we've moved on to other issues, and what we have done is lowered the bar so low when it comes to torture. I mean, we're out there. Barack Obama is actually working with this Omar Suleiman, who was doing our torture for us in Egypt. This is who our administration, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, is now working with to be the the transitional figure out there in Egypt, as if this torture that nobody even denies out there, as far as I know, you know, these 40 folks who were renditioned to Egypt, you know, as if it doesn't matter, as if it didn't exist.
No, I think we are in it for the long run. The Center for Constitutional Rights, we've actually been involved chasing Rumsfeld around the globe since 2004. And the reason why we issued this preliminary Bush indictment was because our intention is, as the continued facts are developed, that we want to continue to develop this indictment. But this is a blueprint for any country, any of the 147 countries, to begin to think about how they can do criminal investigations when George Bush goes to their soil. So we very much need to – this is a long-term fight. You know, international law and the Convention Against Torture is not short attention span theater. It doesn't change with administrations. It doesn't change in midterm elections. It doesn't even necessarily change with the changing of generations. And this is a long-term battle, and we want very much for our country, the United States, to regain its, or at least to develop its status as a country that not only does not torture, as Barack Obama is saying now, but a country that will never torture. And the only way for that to happen is for the current administration and for the international partners to step up.
Now, did you happen to see what David Frum wrote today about this issue? And I'm trying to find. I had the paperwork here. Here we go. David Frum, who was former speechwriter for George W. Bush and likes to appear as one of the few non-insane Republicans left, asked, "Will Obama speak out against the Bush arrest threat? He thinks it's outrageous and that Obama needs to step in and do something about this." Did you happen to see his piece on this?
I did. I saw a short synopsis of the piece, and I think a couple of things. I think, one, the problem that I have here is that I think David Frum is playing both sides. On the one hand, he's the quote-unquote reasonable Republican, but he is also using this opportunity to take a swipe at Obama at the expense of accountability, or in exchange for a lack of accountability with George Bush. So if Barack Obama does as David Frum suggested, and will speak out against this this case, then essentially Barack Obama is standing for not prosecuting George Bush. But you know, on the other hand, you know, my view is that what Barack Obama should be doing is the exact opposite. Barack Obama should be saying, "Listen, international law is what it is, and we will do our part to join the rest of the international community to make sure that this stuff never happens again."
I've invited David Frum to come on the show and explain himself. Maybe he'll be here tomorrow night. Otherwise, well, oh well. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy with Vince Warren. Just a few more minutes. Glenn Beck stuff straight ahead.
Driving train. Pound cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead.
Uh-huh.
Trouble behind.
Yeah, okay, welcome back to the show. Good song, Tony. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. We are speaking with Vince Warren here for just another minute or two, and then we will go to your calls. I'm trying to leave the whole next hour open, 877-520-1150, whatever is on your mind. And I will see if we have time. I will try to play this, I thought, pretty extraordinary audio from Rush Limbaugh's show on Friday when Mike Stark of StarkReports.com just pwned Rush Limbaugh. If you don't know what pwn means, well, then you're just you're too old. All right, Vince, give me an idea of where we are on this. I know that, and again, thank you for stepping up. The Center for Constitutional Rights stepped up to send a letter to Fox News and Roger Ailes after it was clear that Glenn Beck and this outrageous assault on the 78-year-old widow, Professor Francis Fox Piven, calling her an enemy of the Constitution, all manner of things, highlighting her as if she is some dangerous woman when, frankly, with all due respect, most of us have never even heard of her. Death threats came her way. Here's just a few. Maybe they should burst through the front door of this arrogant elitist and slit the hateful cow's throat. We should blow up Piven's office and home. I am all for violence and change. Francis, where do your loved ones live? I mean, some amazing attacks on her. And these were actually on Glenn Beck's website, The Blaze. They were left by commenters, but he did not remove them. They were there for weeks on end. So where is this this letter that you sent to Roger Ailes? You received a reply from Fox News. Where does this leave us at this time, Vince Warren?
Well, we sent the letter, and I think it's important just to note that, you know, at the Center for Constitutional Rights, we are vigorous defenders of the First Amendment.
I know you are, yeah.
But it clearly, the thing that bothers me, particularly bothers me about this, is that Fox's business model seems to be to whip people up into a frenzy so that they think that their country is going to be taken over imminently by, mm-hmm. and you can fill in the blank, whether it's Kenyans or mm-hmm. socialists or whatever.
Acorn, don't forget Acorn was taking Acorn. Over. Oh, that's
yeah,
right.
Actually, CCR, we filed the lawsuit trying to keep Acorn from being defunded as well, precisely mm-hmm. for this reason, because yep. it's an attack on the right. But so what happens is it's Fox's business model to basically whip people up into this frenzy. And then what they do is they step back and they say, well, we didn't have anything to do with it. It's a free country. So we wrote this letter to Roger Ailes. And what Roger Ailes should have done was he should have had a talk with Glenn Beck and said, look, let's think through some strategies. You can say pretty much whatever you want, but we have to think through some strategies to make sure that the people that are listening and watching your show are not going to go buck wild and take this to the next level. This is right after, you know, Gabrielle Giffords was shot. Mm-hmm. Instead of doing that, we got a letter back from his legal department, which is kind of like if you go to a mechanic with a car problem and you say, let's see if we can fix this, and you get a letter back from the auto mechanic's legal department saying, well, we can't really see anything wrong with what you gave into the car. It's not a way to fix a problem. So we basically got the big brush off, and I think what we're thinking about doing is how do we keep this particular – first of all, we're monitoring the website, and we're monitoring what people are saying, and I think also Professor Piven has been very concerned, and she's alerted the authorities with respect to some of the threats that she's been getting. But, you know, Center for Constitutional Rights feels very strongly that the Fox News model, the Glenn Becks of the world, targeting particularized people or particularized groups on the left, including CCR, we were on his chalkboard, is a model that is literally asking people to get into their cars and drive and start shooting people up. And that's the point that we want to get across to them, and we want to make them do something about it.
And, in fact, people have been shot up or almost shot up. This Byron Williams, who was on his way to do exactly that based on what Glenn Beck had to say. I was struck, Vince Warren, by this letter, and you can read these letters over at the CCRjustice.org website. When you heard back from Fox News, first paragraph of this letter where they said, we note the letter was publicly disseminated yesterday, attached to a related press release. Therefore, we doubt this is a sincere effort on your part to stop hostile public speech, but rather an attempt to create ill will for our company. I can't imagine ABC News, NBC, CBS, any legitimate news organization actually responding that way.
No, that's exactly right.
It was incredible. Vince Warren, please check him out at ccrjustice.org. Follow them on Twitter at TheCCR, or you can follow Vince himself at Twitter, at Vince Warren. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Keep up the good fight. I think we'll be talking in the days ahead.
I hope so. Thanks so much, Brad.
You betcha. All right. Your calls, 877-520-1150, and whatever's on your mind and whatever's on my mind. Straight ahead. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. The hour on the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, drafted into duty tonight once again. Be in the media over your public airwaves as the Malloys are cruising the Caribbean with our friends, who's down there, Bobby Kennedy Jr., Kerry Harrison. Liz Winstead was supposed to go, but she didn't go. Why didn't you go, Liz? I have to tweet her and find out. You can tweet me at the Brad Blog. You can call in this hour at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. These are your public airwaves. I have to keep reminding you, use them or lose them more than you already have. And if you know anything about anything, you know that you pretty much already have lost them to the corporate takeover of our public airwaves, which corporations, of course, have decided that 91% of these airwaves should be used to push right-wing ideas for some reason. 91% of our public airwaves. 877-520-1150 if you want to get in. Don't wait till the end of the show, as you guys always do. Chat room is open and hopping at bradblog.com. The lovely Desi Doyen has finally wrestled her computer to the ground and is now in the chat room along with For Earth, who is saving everyone tonight there in the chat room. Thank you, For Earth. Good to see all of you other folks there in the chat room. Let me see. What other business do I have to take care of? I mentioned earlier that the Democratic Leadership Council will be folding. That's the right-wing corporatist bunch of Democrats that organized during the Clinton years. And, of course, well, they call themselves centrist. Nothing centrist about them. They're just corporatists. But they're going out of business, we're sorry to say. Not sorry at all, actually, because apparently they're out of money. So they could close their doors as soon as next week, reports Ben Smith at Politico. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. And with them, of course, goes Jane Harman, this congresswoman from California, Los Angeles, out here, incredibly announces that she's leaving. She hasn't announced it yet, actually. Still, we'll call it a rumor. I guess she hasn't officially said she's leaving yet. Another corporatist, Blue Dog Democrat, who ran for Congress over the past year, made Marcy Winograd run against her in a primary for a year, only to win that election, did Jane Harman. And 2 weeks, what is it? Where are we? How long has it been? 3 weeks since they were sworn in, January 20th. She announces she's leaving. She's resigning within weeks. Well, she hasn't announced it yet, so we'll see what happens. But we did speak with Marcy Winograd, who is considering her opinions as far as what she will do, her options as far as what she will do, if, in fact, Jane Harmon cuts and runs, as is all the news today. We talked with Marcy Winograd about that earlier in the show. If you missed it, too bad. You got to pay attention. But you can check out bradblog.com tonight. We will have the archives up late night tonight. Or if you are smart enough to be a Mike Malloy podcast subscriber supporting independent muckraking, troublemaking media over your corporate airwaves, then you can get that podcast later. So the DNC is out. The Jane Harmon is maybe out. The Blue Dogs got just, well, shellacked. That was, those were the Democrats who lost, by the way. About 40 of them or so in the Blue Dog caucus lost their jobs last November. It wasn't because they were too liberal. That's all I'm saying. Not because they were too progressive. FedEx CEO, a huge financial supporter of George W. Bush and Senator John McCain, said that he supports the idea of getting rid of oil altogether. This is the FedEx CEO. He is now joining the call that Barack Obama began in part at the State of the Union. CEO Frederick W. Smith, in a Fortune column, Smith described how the 670 aircraft and 70,000 motorized vehicles of his company deliver 7 million packages a day, nearly every single one of which is fueled by oil. This dependence, he writes, comes at a significant cost. What do you think? Smith said putting the U.S. military at risk and requiring, quote, requiring us to accommodate governments that share neither our values nor our goals. Oil spikes bring about recessions, and petroleum was responsible for 43% of U.S. energy-related CO2 emissions in 2009. That's what Fred Smith said out loud, supporter of George Bush and John McCain, talking about CO2 emissions. What? There must be some mistake. He didn't get the memo that it's all a hoax and a fraud. There is no such thing as global warming. CO2 is just what we breathe, so that we exhale. So there's no danger. For those who don't know me, I was just now being satirical and sardonic. Smith agreed with the president that America can power away from petroleum. He wrote, "We cannot continue down this path. There is, however, a solution that may become economically attractive sooner than most think. Cars and trucks powered by electricity. Electricity is generated by a diverse, domestic, stable, fundamentally scalable portfolio of fuels that is almost entirely free of oil." So this is the CEO of FedEx. He says, "I am not someone who tends to advocate increased government involvement in the private sector, but there is no free market for oil. This is not a market issue," he says. "It is a national security issue." Oh, do you think? Wish somebody had said that 20 or 30 or 40 years ago and someone would have paid attention and someone in the Chamber of Commerce wouldn't have been fighting against it for so long. And the Koch brothers. Speaking of which, Obama spoke to the Chamber of Commerce today. A lot of folks have been critical of him for doing that, for putting out what he calls an olive branch of sorts to these pretty despicable folks at the Chamber. Pretty despicable folks at the Chamber. Nonetheless, AFL-CIO spokesman Eddie Vail sent out an email today listing passages from Obama's speech that the AFL-CIO liked. He says that Obama's reminder to business that they have a responsibility to America, that they can't just worry about shareholders and the bottom line, He quoted Obama when he said, ask yourself what you can do for America. Ask yourself what you can do to hire American workers, to support the American economy, and to invest in this nation. That's what Obama said. And the AFL-CIO liked to hear it. They also liked it when Obama said, for example, even if we work to eliminate burdensome regulations, America's businesses have a responsibility to recognize that there are some safeguards and standards that are necessary to protect the American people from harm or exploitation. Well, that's true, I suppose. They may have a responsibility, at least where laws are concerned, where workplace laws are concerned, that there are, in fact, some safeguards and standards that are necessary to protect American people from harm, at least the people who work there. Yeah, you know, those regulations are all well and good. If they're not enforced, they don't mean a whole hell of a lot. And here's the thing that it seems to me that Barack Obama doesn't understand, doesn't seem to understand, that when it comes to corporations, they have really one duty. They have a fiduciary duty. They have a fiduciary duty to their shareholders to put the good of the shareholders above everything else. That's it. They don't have a responsibility to Americans. They don't have a responsibility to workers, to hire workers. And by the way, if you haven't noticed, they don't talk about business any. The right-wingers don't talk about business anymore. Now they talk about job creators. They don't talk about corporations. They don't talk about business. No, no, they are the job creators. No, they ain't. The people are the job creators, because unless there's a demand for jobs from the people, there will be no jobs created. Business and corporations don't just go out there and create jobs just for the hell of it, just because it's fun. They have a responsibility, a legal responsibility, to their shareholders. That's it. So how do you give them incentive to do the right thing? They ain't going to just do it because Barack Obama axed nicely. That's what I say. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Come back with your calls, 877-520-1150. Maybe I'll play that Rush clip, Mike Stark with Rush. When we come back, 877-520-1150. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. Get to your calls at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Whatever is on your mind, because after all, as I say, these are your airwaves. Use them or lose them. The DNC announces it will take no corporate cash at the Charlotte Convention. For the first time, the Democratic National Convention will not accept donations from corporations, PACs, or federal lobbyists in 2012. Individual contributions will also be capped, another first, at $100,000. At $100,000, that's the cap. You can't give more than $100,000, because then, you know, people might feel they owe you favors. So keep it just the small checks only, $100,000 or less from any individual, but not from a corporation. That would be outrageous, according to the contract governing the convention. Democrats say the policy is in keeping with the fundraising focus that powered President Barack Obama's 2008 campaign.
From the very beginning, President Obama has placed a high priority on increasing the influence of grassroots and individual donors, and this convention will go further in that direction than any convention ever, said DNC spokesman Brad Woodhouse. Yeah, okay. 877-520-1150. Let's go to Ike. Speaking of South Carolina, Ike in, is this Charleston, South Carolina, or Charlotte? Ike?
No, Chucky Town, as we call it here. How you doing?
Chucky Town. All right, good. How are you doing, Ike? What's on your mind?
Yeah, fair to Midland. I just wanted to point something out about Reagan. And this is a strategy the Republicans have been following ever since he got into office. And I remember it real well. It's a distinct quote. He said, you know, if you want to kill programs, government programs, you've got two ways to do it. You can either do it through outright legislation and pay the political cost, or you can spend so much money you bankrupt the government, and then you won't have the money to fund those programs.
Now
that's been a political... I'm sorry.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Well, that's been a political strategy they followed ever since he put it forward.
Well, you know, it could arguably be the strategy. I'm not familiar with Ronald Reagan having said that himself. I'll take you at your word. I know that it's certainly, Newt Gingrich talked about it, you know, starving the beast and all of that. And so, yeah, I mean, these guys don't like government. That's that. They don't like government, at least this new crop of Republicans. They don't like government. Why the hell anybody would want to put them in charge? I mean, I'm plenty critical of the Democrats, make no mistake about it. But why anybody would want to put people in charge of government who hate government makes no sense to me.
Well, they like their form of government. They've already, you know, particularly the Tea Party, they've already proven that they've been bought and paid for. All you got to do is look at their staff and who they've hired. But I'll tell you something too, just as another thing off the wall, since it's kind of freewheeling and open mic. I'll tell you something. You know, we didn't learn anything from the days back in Jimmy Carter's day when we were all lining up for gasoline. You know, we've been so foolish for so long.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I just don't understand why it is that every building that we've built since then, or every building that we have standing now, how come we haven't put in cisterns, particularly where there's drought areas?
Mm-hmm.
How come we haven't been using solar on every building?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, well, you can't get all your power from solar. Well, that's true, but at the same time, if I can provide 40% of the power that I need per building, then guess what? Maybe we don't have to rip off the tops of the mountains in West Virginia.
Right.
Maybe we don't have to have big pools of coal ash poison our environment, the acid rain and all the other stuff, you know?
I know it very well, and of course I agree with you. And you know, hey, the sun is free. There's this great big huge energy.
I'm ready to get back to work, brother.
I know. Well, the sun is free. There's a huge energy source flying from this, falling down from the sky. Of course, the fossil fuel companies don't want it. Hey, appreciate the call, Ike. Good job. Back with more straight ahead. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. 877-520-1150.
You're going to love this. Just love it.
Yes, I do.
I got the feeling there's something right.
No, it's not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Not scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Stuck in the middle with you all week long. Right here on the Mike Malloy Show, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for the Malloys all week as they're out cruising the Caribbean.
We need to get some Pirates of the Caribbean music or something, a little Love Boat or something. We'll play that. We'll figure that out later on this week. Taking your calls at 877-520-1150. Later on this week, by the way, John Fugelsang will be joining us. Looking forward to that. Also, Tom Tomorrow, the great Tom Tomorrow, will be joining us. And if you don't know Tom Tomorrow, go on over to, where is he, over at Salon? I just love Tom Tomorrow. Anyway, I'll just put it that way for now, and we'll see if he can continue publishing. I'm worried about it because so many papers are going out of business, which means they drop Tom Tomorrow. Which means it's very difficult to make a living, you know? I was going to play some of that Limbaugh, but let's get to some calls. 877-520-1150. Julie in Camden. You better turn off your radio, Julie. Turn down your radio.
Yes?
Turn down your radio.
It's off.
Oh, it is? It's her phone? It's her phone.
Hello. Well,
what do we do about that?
I'm here.
Okay, I won't talk. Go ahead. Your phone is weird, so go ahead and ask your question, Julie.
Sorry about that.
All right.
Well, I was thinking, like most everybody, I was raised with the idea that your actions have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And of late, or last, I don't know, 15, 20 years, it seems like anybody in the public limelight who does something that obviously is unconscionably wrong, there doesn't seem to be any kind of consequence to it.
No, you're absolutely right, Julie, and I'm only turning you down for a second so that we don't have that strange echo, but you're absolutely right, and this is one of the things we're going to be actually talking about tomorrow night with Bob Edgar of Common Cause. I wrote about this last week at Brad Blog concerning Justice Clarence Thomas, who falsified his disclosure forms for the past 20 years, hiding the fact that he had received hundreds of thousands of dollars from right-wing organizations via his wife's income. I mean, imagine if, we learned that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had received nearly $1 million from Planned Parenthood over the past 20 years, but didn't bother to include it on her disclosure forms. And yet, when it comes to Clarence Thomas, nobody's talking about it. This came out, just last week. Common Cause originally broke some of this story, and I've added to it over at bradblog.com and detailed exactly what a crime, quite literally, this is. I mean, the man signed these forms testifying that that they weren't falsified, that they were accurate to the best of his knowledge, right above where it spells out exactly what the crime is for falsifying these forms. He did this for 20 years, and now no one in the media is even talking about it. Well, the LA Times came out with a story originally and quoted a law professor saying that this isn't a crime of any sort. I've tried to reach that law professor to say, hey, what do you mean this isn't a crime of any sort? Of course it's a crime. It's spelled out a half an inch below his signature on every damn form for the last 20 years. Of course it's a crime. Well, that law professor hasn't called me back. Anyway, Julie, continue. I'm sorry. I had to turn you down.
Well, it's been a mystery to me why, ever since all of those arms for drugs flights came into Mena, Arkansas, why hasn't Ollie North ever been behind bars?
Well, and I got to let you go, Julie, just because the phone is so crazy, but I'll speak to that. Ollie North was not behind bars because, in fact, Congress gave him immunity from prosecution. And so when he was found guilty in his court case, he later on got off on appeal because the courts had decided that he was granted immunity in Congress and therefore couldn't be held liable, that the information that was used to prosecute him was actually taken under immunity in Congress, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that yeah, that's Oliver North. I mean, it's only gotten worse. It's way worse.
Really got a lot of information out of him? Right.
Well, I know. I appreciate that, and I understand that. But this has only gotten worse. And, Julie, I'm going to let you go just because it's impossible to talk to you there with that crazy phone. But I all right, thanks. I take your point. And no, it's only gotten worse. In as a matter of fact, there is no accountability anymore. I was talking with a reporter yesterday, actually, about the Clarence Thomas story, someone who is working on a piece on this. I hope it'll be out soon. And, you know, she was sort of asking me my thoughts, you know, as far as why is there no accountability here. And one of the reasons is these guys are so brazen that they realize, remember in 2004, Karl Rove said, and I quote, "We create our own reality." Well, that is what they have been doing ever since. They create their own reality. Torture? Torture is not torture. Torture is enhanced interrogation. It's not illegal. Waterboarding is not torture. There is no global warming. They just create their own reality. Clarence Thomas, oh, I don't need to check the box that says whether my wife received hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Heritage Foundation or not. It was just an oversight. Anybody got a problem with it? Come and get me. And they just call everyone's bluff, and they realize that Democrats are cowards, and they're not going to come after them, and they're going to be able to get away with anything. And George W. Bush is going to be able to go to the Super Bowl, sit up there on the big Jumbotron screen and wave, and everybody's going to cheer, and isn't that wonderful? And this guy is a war criminal. Democrats, you going to do anything about it? Apparently not. Barack Obama, you going to do anything about it? Apparently not. Interesting story related here. This broke, I think it was last Friday, from, this is a TPM reporting. Today was supposed to be actually last Thursday. Today was supposed to be Scott Block's day in court. And given that he'd reached a deal with prosecutors and pled guilty to misdemeanor contempt of Congress, the outcome had seemed relatively certain he wouldn't be heading to prison. But a judge had other plans for Scott Block. Now, for those of you who don't remember Scott Block, and I'm sure you don't, because once again, you know, Republicans, you know, when they're found guilty of crimes, nobody talks about it. But let's see here. He was the office of the special counsel under George W. Bush. And he was found guilty, essentially, of, what he was doing. And the reason why he was being investigated was because his office is supposed to be protecting whistleblowers. And instead of protecting them, he was making life worse for them. And when he was being investigated for this, he called in Geeks on Call to wipe his government hard drive clean during the course of a probe into his alleged retaliation against employees. So he was to come to his sentencing last week, and they had struck a plea deal, as they always do. He was going to get his little slap on the wrist and be sent on his way. But Magistrate Judge Deborah Robinson of Washington's federal trial court said in a ruling last week that Block, the former head of the Office of Special Counsel, must spend at least 1 month behind bars. Judge Robinson found that Congress expressly provided for a mandatory minimum sentence of 1 month, evidencing its intention to do so, that the language by which it did so is unambiguous, and there is no authority permits the court to disregard that provision or to interpret it other than in accordance with its plain meaning. Well, hallelujah! A Republican is going to jail, at least for a month. And, of course, he'll probably be appealing it or something. We'll see what happens there. Also, last week, by the way, we found out that, yes, in fact, Karl Rove and friends were illegally violating the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act, which disallows use of government offices for political schemes. And, of course, Karl Rove, as the director of the White House political office, had been doing that at hundreds of agencies. He was found guilty of it in this report by the inspector general. And, of course, because he was guilty of it, he'll go to jail, right? Well, no. As it turns out, as Marcy Wheeler, Empty Wheel, explained to me last week that, well, the punishment for violating the Hatch Act is to leave government. You must leave. You must quit. And, of course, since the violation of the Hatch Act was not found until, what, 4 or 5 years later, all of these guys have already quit. And so, and actually, Marcy Wheeler, to her credit, pointed it out at the time when Karl Rove left. When this investigation began, Karl Rove left. He quit. He resigned to spend more time with his family. When he did, that was it. It was over. Accountability ended. There was no punishment you could bring to him because the only punishment was you must leave government, and he left government. So no one has been held accountable for that because all of the people who did this, who had these meetings in government, who used these federal agencies to explain how to help elect Republicans, all of those people have left because there's a new administration. So there's no one to hold accountability, no one to hold accountable. So there will be no accountability as usual. But of course, Barack Obama is looking forward, not back. And that's what we're left with. We look forward, not back. The bar is lowered and lower and lower, and it will continue getting lower until somebody comes in and says, yeah, you remember that rule of law? We mean it. 877-520-1150. Give us a call.
Where is the shepherd for this lost lamb? There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns. Someone who'll watch over me.
My thanks tonight to, of course, the greatest engineer in the land, or at least in this room, Tony Sorrentino, right here. Thank you, brother. Great job, as always. My thanks, of course, to LA's K-Talk AM 1150 for allowing us to come in here and secretly use Stephanie Miller's studio without telling her. Also, producer, screener, chat room, babeski, producer, Desi Doyen. Thanks, Des. And, of course, chat room savior today, our friend For Earth in the chat room. Really appreciate you jumping in and saving our skin tonight. Of course, my thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy, as always, wherever they may be out on the high seas tonight. And to my guests, Will Bunch and Vince Warren tonight. Tomorrow night, Bob Edgar from Common Cause. And much more that will no doubt happen between here and there. And we may have Roseanne Barr. Well, Roseanne on the show later this week. What do you think of that? How do you like them apples? All right, and who knows what other mischief we'll be getting into all week long. 877-520-1150. We'll try to get to a few more callers here. Oh, look, it's our pal Orangutan from Illinois. Hey, Orangutan, how are you, sir?
Hey, Brad, it's Orangutan.
I know, but some people say Orangutan, and I don't think we have ever spoken in person, have we?
No, that's fine. I just wanted to say, hey, great job tonight on the show. Tony, top-notch music, and you're holding the fort down well. And if we ever hold these guys accountable, man, we'll all be celebrating. So, good job.
Well, you know what? Thanks, brother. I really appreciate that. But to explain to folks, you and I have actually never spoken on the phone, but via email. And you're a great commenter at BradBlog. And most importantly, really, Orang, we'll call you. Your support of BradBlog by getting the word out there, by voting it up over at Reddit and Dig and all of these other places. I don't think people understand how important it is that when you read something that you like, that you appreciate, that you think it needs to get out there, particularly when it comes from a progressive and a progressive point of view, how important it is to hit those Reddit buttons, to tweet it, to send it around via email, to get the word out, because we don't have, progressives do not have, the networks that and the airwaves that the right wingers do. So, Orangutan, I really, really appreciate your help there.
Exactly, Brad. You deserve it. So,
all right. How's that? By the way, how's that election going? The early voting going on out there in that mayoral race in Chicago.
We're gonna get the job done. We're gonna do our best. So what else can you do?
Well, here's what we can do. We can tell people in Illinois that if you want your vote to have a chance of counting, your best chances is to vote on election day, not vote early, because in Chicago they force you to vote on 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting machines prior to the election day. So if you want to be able to verify your damn vote and vote on a piece of paper, wait until election day.
You got it. You got it, man.
Thanks for the call, my friend, and for all the good work. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right. let's get to Roger. Roger in L.A., what's on your mind, brother? Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Brad. One point everybody forgets is I think Mubarak came to power about the same day as Reagan here, because January Sadat was assassinated. And he came to power in January after the 15th. I don't know exactly, but maybe the same day. And,
no, I don't think it was certainly not the same day.
Maybe a week, within the same week.
Okay. I'm not sure about that, but all right.
Yeah, 1981.
All right.
And then this dictator, going on for 30 years with the coddling of Reagan mm-hmm. for 8 years, and then his assistant Bush for 4 more years,
mm-hmm.
12 years. And then they blame it on Obama. What's happening now? That's ridiculous.
Oh, that they blame Obama that he didn't know what was going to happen in Egypt?
Yeah.
That we were going to lose our dictator that we worked so hard to keep for 30 years?
And then if you look at the other problems, like the oil problems, the energy problems, immigration problems,
mm-hmm.
everything started with Reagan, and it's all coming to roost after 30 years, if you look at it. He had this open border policy, and people have come from Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala.
Where do you come from, Roger?
I'm coming from India.
From India. And by the way, he assumed office, Mubarak did, October of 1981. So that would have been a few months at least after Reagan came to office.
But then Sadat got assassinated in January, right?
Now I have to look that up. What am I, Google? I don't know. let's see, Sadat, president was, October 14, it looks, 1981. But close enough. I do take your point. Hey, Roger, I appreciate the call. Thanks for using your airwaves and spreading the good word and telling the truth out there.
Okay, thanks.
All right, brother, take care. All right, well, that's another night. What's wrong, Tone? You okay? Is everything all right? Okay. Thanks for joining us tonight. We will be back again tomorrow and for the rest of the week. Please spread the word. Between now and then, I hope you'll stop by and visit us at bradblog.com. That's where you'll find me. Have a great night, America. We'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit.